Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Optusport Football Podcast. This week, Phil and I were joined by former Denmark goalkeeper Thomas Sorensen. We discuss Socceroos' emphatic victory over Bangladesh, ask why the injuries are beginning to mount up in Spain, and we also pick our Premier League team of the season so far. I'm Mark Schwarzer, and we'll be talking all that and more on the Optusport Football Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Optusport Football Podcast, where Thomas Sorensen is joining Phil and I today. But Phil, we've got to start with this firstly. Talk us all about La Liga Mascot Olympics. And I heard it was 15 minutes around from your house, and there's another event that you didn't go to. And you probably had a ticket to, of course, because you didn't go.
Thanks for that. Yeah, it was close to my house. I chose not to attend the La Liga Mascot Olympics. It looked like a fantastic family fun day out. I didn't go, but I was following it online, which is what everyone does these days anyway. And I know you're dying to know who won, right?
Yeah, go on.
Obviously, yeah, okay, you give us. Yeah. Amunt, the Valencia bat, won the Olympics. He was very speedy. Dimoni, the Real Mallorca demon, came second, and Atletico Madrid and Andorra were tied for third spot. So it was a keenly contested mascot Olympics. Some truly ridiculous events, including cucumber throwing. Who can throw the cucumber the furthest? It was Valencia who came out on top. So there we go. The big event of the weekend.
Two questions though. Who was your favorite mascot for you personally, and which event was your favorite?
So I have a very soft spot for Leganés's Super Pepino. Pepino being cucumber in Spanish. So it is a large cucumber dressed up as a superhero with a mask and a cape. Leganés being a part of Spain where lots of cucumbers are grown. Obviously the cucumber throwing was my favorite event. So shout out to Super Pepino. He looked a bit tired yesterday. He wasn't at his best, but you know, he gave it his all, and he remains my personal favorite.
Yeah, he's out of season, isn't he? Anyway, Thomas, who's your favorite? Welcome, mate. Welcome. Haven't seen you for a while, but whilst we're on mascots, who's your favorite ever mascot? Have you got one?
Oh, ever mascot. You know, there's been some funny ones. I think you never come across them really. You see them sort of walking. I used to sort of, you know, at Old Trafford, the devil used to annoy me running around. You know, he was always down the end where we were warming up.
That was a tactic to annoy the opposition. Yeah.
And there was a mascot down in Albania once that actually started kicking our balls away while we were warming up. So he ran onto the pitch, and our second string goalkeeper actually ended up tackling him. So, so they can get too much involved sometimes.
I can concur with regarding the Red Devil. He was a pain in the backside, absolutely. And I think it was a tactic. I thought you might have said Black Cat. I thought you would have said maybe the Black Cat. I thought he was all right, you know. And my favorite, and it's only because it was my son's all-time favorite, was Rory the Lion from Middlesbrough. Knew him personally as well. See, that's why there's a bit of a personal attachment. Used to come to my son's birthday party quite a lot. I used to organize it because my son was infatuated with him. And actually, the first time he ever came to his birthday party, my son absolutely crapped his pants. He didn't know what to do because you used to watch him from afar, right? And all of a sudden, Rory the Lion is at his birthday party in his little, like, tiny preschool. And honestly, it was hilarious. But he still loves Rory the Lion right today.
Swartz, when did you have to break the news to him that it wasn't a real lion? Like, when did that? Was it like Santa at some point?
No, I think it was about last year. I mean, he's 24 now. So yeah, probably last year that he worked out that he wasn't real. Right, let's move on to football. That's what we're here for. I mean, I suppose it was all associated with football, talking about the mascots. International break. a lot of football. People think there's not much going on. Obviously, club football takes a back seat, and it's all about international football. Let's get straight on to the Socceroos. They played against Bangladesh, and it was a convincing win, which we kind of expected. Suter, Borrello, Mitchell Duke gets two, and Jamie McLaren gets a hat-trick. I've always found that when you play against lesser opposition, it's you're on a hiding to nothing unless you put in a really good performance. Thomas, isn't that right? Like, wherever you've been, if you know FIFA rankings, the expectation is you've got to brush this team aside. And actually, you've got to make it look convincing. You can't just beat them 1-2-0. You've got to hammer them home, don't you?
Yeah, and you know 9 out of 10, that's what's going to happen. But you also know that one time where something fluky happens. You know, we played Malta once and they scored out of nowhere, and suddenly you're chasing and their keeper pulls out miraculous saves and blocks and everything else. And, you know, and these are the things that worries you when you go into those games. So I think we've all been there, but it was a professional performance, I thought, from the Socceroos, as you said. I thought, you know, again, just trying to get into a new qualifying campaign. I thought Conor Metcalf, I think he's doing a, you know, great job in Germany and played well in this one. Suter is not getting a lot of game time, but got a goal. You know, as much as the result sort of, you know, might not be as important, I think it's important that the players get together and people get game time as well.
Phil, when you look at it, also Spain's obviously under a lot of pressure all the time to win every game. Everyone expects Spain to win, right? And then when they're playing a lesser opposition, even like this group, now we talked about it earlier on about this qualifying group, how close it was with Scotland. And up until their last game against Scotland at home, Spain were on a bit of a shaky ground, weren't they? And the level of criticism is enormous.
It is. I mean, listen, what I liked about Australia is that they went out and they won this game 7-0. They were 4-0 up at half time, and they still came out in the second half and they went for more. And they didn't do what Spain did. Spain played really low-ranked opposition as well in this international break. They played Cyprus, and they were 3-0 up after 28 minutes, and they said, right, that's it, we're finished. They basically stopped playing. The game finished 3-1, but they didn't feel the need to go out and exert any more energy. Okay, you can say that maybe that's clever, that's managing your exertions, managing your minutes, I understand that. But I like that Australia were hungry to go out and keep scoring goals. That's a good sign. And obviously, we've spoken before on previous podcasts during international breaks about Australia and their recent run of impressive results against bigger teams, the 2-2 draw against Mexico and losing narrowly to England as well, when they've done well against, you know, high ranked opposition. And we said then, okay, how much do these kind of games prepare them for what they have to come up in World Cup qualifying and also in the Asian Cup as well, when they are going to be expected to take the initiative? Well we saw that against Bangladesh, who are ranked 184th in the world. They're the lowest ranked team that Australia have played in 20 odd years. So they're not a great team, but Australia found a way to break them down. And who are they going to be playing in the Asian Cup? Well, the first games are India, Syria and Uzbekistan. Broadly speaking, opposition of a similar-ish kind of level to Bangladesh. So if you can break down teams that are going to just resolutely, desperately defend against you, you're doing well. And that's what Australia are going to have to do in their continental matches. So it was a really positive, game and result for Australia.
Yeah, certainly that group, when you look at it, Syria and Uzbekistan are always quite challenging, certainly in Asia. India is the one, but they're a bit of an unknown. I played against India back in 2011. I think we beat them 4-0. And they put on a decent fight. I think they've come a long way since then as well. So it's going to be a slightly different challenge. I think they're certainly better teams than Bangladesh, and that's also why they're at the they'll be at the Asian Cup. We saw also England playing against Malta. Malta, a similar sort of ranking as Bangladesh in their sort of high hundreds. The difference, I suppose, is Australia just started their campaign for qualification, right? So they need points on the board to make sure they get off on the right start. England have already qualified. And that's one of the hardest ones, isn't it, Thomas? When you're playing against a lesser opposition, you've already qualified and you've had to make, the manager's made changes for various reasons, whether it's to do with injuries, but also because you've already qualified and you're giving players on the fringes an opportunity to play, which makes it difficult often because they haven't played together before. And then that's where the difficulty comes into it, right? Playing against those lesser opposition.
Yeah, for sure, because there's no rhythm. And there's there's also a mentality issue. You know, we've been there. You know, you have qualified. You know, there'll be players in the team that, you know, that are in the squad that hasn't played much, so they'll play their chance. But it'll be a mix of players, as you say. And, you know, those games are so tough. And we also got to realize that the world football has changed. You know, you look at the Maltese team, you know, they'll have, you know, a couple of players in Germany. They'll have it in you know, maybe Austria, you know, Czech Republic. They'll have players in decent leagues. So it's not the minnows of the past. And if you're not on your game, if you just take the foot a little bit off the pedal, like we saw with Spain as well, it's going to be difficult. And that's why I think it's also important for Bangladesh to play Australia, because, you know, they see what the standard is and they'll raise their level.
Phil, I want to ask you, out of all the teams so far you've seen and have qualified for the Euros, is there a team that stands out for you?
I think there's two teams that stand out quite sort of head and shoulders above the rest for me, and that's France and Portugal. Now, some people might put England in that bracket of favourites as well. For me, France and Portugal, in terms of squad depth, in terms of sheer talent, are ahead. England are just fractionally below them. And then there's a group of sides, including Spain, that will feel that they have a good chance. But in terms of sort of raw talent, and you go through the squad and you think, hold on, this is actually ridiculous. France and Portugal have a level of squad depth and world-class players that I don't think anyone in the tournament have. So in theory, for me, those two are pretty clear favourites above everyone else. England maybe just fractionally below them, I'd say.
Thomas, where's Denmark? Where are they on the rankings right now?
They've disappointed me a bit during this qualification. I think this last game where they had to win against Slovenia, they probably played one of their best games, but they haven't been at all great since the World Cup. And that's a worrying thing, because, you know, you know, we saw what obviously happened, and that they probably played a little bit like Australia. They, you know, last Euros played above what they probably will achieve normally. And I think we have to level our expectations a bit this time. I think, you know, get through the group and then see what happens. I think that's going to be the plan.
Do you think they're good enough to get out of the group? I mean, whoever it
is. Yeah, you know, it depends. Like, we'll see 2nd of December. Like, you know, yeah. You know, we know the Euros. Like, you can end up with, you know, a group of death. You could end up with, you know, bloody, you know, with you know, France, Italy, if they qualify. You know, you can end up with great teams all around, and there's no guarantees. So, yes, I'll be happy if they go through. I think it'd be great, but there's no guarantees for Denmark, because I don't think they've played well enough up until this point.
And finally, on this little chat, who is the most surprising for you? Phil, so far, who, out of the teams that qualified, who are the ones that probably, yeah, you didn't expect that?
I think, I don't know about surprising, but I think Turkey have qualified in pretty impressively comfortable fashion. There's surprising because they haven't had a recent history of qualifying for international tournaments, but if you look at the size of the country and how obsessed they are with football, they should actually be a European football league powerhouse, and they haven't been. So yeah, Turkey surprised me. Nice to see countries like, for example, Albania qualifying as well for a second major European championships. But there's always a team. I mean, Denmark, and I'm not just saying this because we've got Thomas on the podcast, but Denmark are a side that have overachieved massively. I mean, it's a small country. It's 5.5-6 million people. It's not a country with a major population, but they have produced so many talented players that, yeah, what happens is that expectations grow, right? So now, Thomas, I'm assuming that people in Denmark, you know, kind of expect the team to be reaching, you know, quarterfinals, latter stages of major competitions, when really, in theory, they probably shouldn't.
Yeah, no, I think so. But you know, we see what happens in, like, Norway. You know, they got one of the best players on the planet. You know, Odegaard as well, you know, with Haaland and him. And, you know, they can't qualify. They can't even get close. And Sweden now had a, you know, horrible campaign. Mm. So, you know, it takes a lot of effort, a lot of planning, and you know, talent development and everything else for a small country. And yeah, I don't think we can take anything for granted, for sure. But great to see, like you said, Albania, Serbia as well. It was great to see Mitrovic I think, you know, shedding a few tears and you know, this morning as well.
Let's talk about, obviously, international football. The amount of games is obviously a big topic we talk about, or people talk about constantly. And it is a major, major issue. And now we're seeing injuries pile up even more. We look at Vinicius Jr. out for Real Madrid. Big, big loss, isn't it, Phil? I mean, I know he hasn't necessarily been at his best, but he was starting to find form.
Ah, yeah, it's a huge blow for Real Madrid to lose Vinicius Jr., not just because he is a player that can make a difference in games and unlock defences, and Real Madrid often have to come up against defences that are pretty tight, pretty resolute, and having someone who can produce magic like Vinicius Jr. is absolutely key. But also when you add his name to the quite ridiculous list of injuries that they have, so they haven't got Courtois, they haven't got Militao, they've been out for the season. They now don't have Camavinga, who also got injured in this international break. They don't have Tchouaméni, they don't have Vinicius. Jude Bellingham had a shoulder problem. Arda Gula, the new signing, also hasn't been able to play because of injury. Dani Ceballos has got a problem as well. It has been a very, very long list of injuries for Real Madrid. And when you add Vinicius Jr. to that list, it can get problematic. Obviously, you mentioned about the number of injuries that we're seeing and international breaks, and Gavi, Barcelona midfielder Gavi, got injured for Spain last night. We think at the time of recording, we don't have it confirmed, but we think it's a cruciate ligament problem in his knee, which means that he's going to miss the rest of the season, which is another huge blow for Barcelona and Spain, because he'd been such an important player for both of those teams. And it's sort of led to a bit of criticism of the Spain national coach Luis de la Fuente for playing him. Why did you play Gavi? He's already played so many minutes for Spain. He's played so many minutes for Barcelona. Spain had already qualified. Why did you play Gavi? Which I think is misguided and unfair. Firstly, Spain still had something to play in this game. They had top spot to play for in the group, as you mentioned. It wasn't a completely meaningless game. Yes, they'd qualified, but obviously the manager is going to put out the best team possible to achieve his objectives. And secondly, national team managers don't have the players week in, week out. So when you get a group of players, you want to play the best players so they can understand how each other works, get the notion of how the team is set up. Obviously, you want to play your best players. So I do not understand this this pretty harsh criticism of Luis de la Fuente for playing his best team. Another debate you can have is if there's too much football. If there's too much football, full stop, then okay. But don't start criticising the manager. And Barcelona, the club, criticising the national federation, they can look at themselves, because what are they doing on the 21st of December? The final La Liga game of the year is on the 20th of December. They're at home to Almeria. 24 hours later, they're going to Dallas to play a friendly against Club America of Mexico, which does not exactly scream player welfare, does it? So it needs, if we're going to look after footballers, it needs everyone to look after footballers, not just the national team, not just the clubs.
But that's always a debate, right? The clubs will always argue with national teams, but also in Spain, it's probably, I know there is a massive support for the national team, but when it comes to Barcelona, Real Madrid and their players, it's really Barcelona, the press, their players injured, vice versa, Real Madrid the same, right? I mean, they are the big boys.
Spain is actually quite a unique country in that it isn't a country of the national team. Like, the national team doesn't really bring everybody together. There's the Real Madrid camp, there's the Barcelona camp, and they have their own interests. And whether they cross into the national team interests, fine. But people are very much, I support Real Madrid. And then, okay, Spain maybe, depending on who's managing and who's playing. Or I support Barcelona. And then maybe Spain, depending on who's the manager and who's playing. So it's not a country of national team obsession like many, many other countries.
Yeah, and I would say my take on this, you know, it's for the club to rotate. And, you know, they got the squad, they got the most amount of games. I think for the national team, you know, as you said, they've got a few games. This was an important one to finish top of the group. You know, you can't fault the manager Fuentes for playing in him. And you know, it'll be up to, and they're only, 3 months, 4 months into the season? You know, it's not like a March game friendly where there's nothing at stake. So, you know, I don't buy, you know, if there is a criticism, I don't buy it.
But Thomas, I know it's like, what you know it's like playing for your national team, right? And you know you still got something to play for.
You want to play.
In a qualifying tournament. You want to play every game, right? You don't want to go, the manager comes, look, I need to rest you. You've played a lot of games. I'll be like, no. I want to play. And it's so important to finish top of your group because you've got a different seeding.
Yeah, for sure. So for me, it all lies with the club. You know, they see them week in and week out. You know, it's for them to judge, you know, how many games and the load on players. You know, we've all been in a club environment and there's so many scientists and, you know, who measure, you know, what you do in training, how much you run in games, and they have all graphs and everything else. So they know the fitness and they know the risk if they push it too far. And, you know, I think for the national team manager, it's not their issue.
So what's the solution here? What is the solution? Because if people are saying we need to look after players, Maurizio Sarri, the manager of Lazio, former manager of Chelsea, said the other month, we're sending players to the slaughterhouse. What's the solution? Are we going to make fewer matches for international teams? Are we going to make fewer games for clubs? Because that's not happening, because the Champions League is being expanded. The Club World Cup is being expanded. The World Cup is being expanded. We've already seen the Euros been expanded as well. So everybody knows more matches mean more money. The clubs want more money. Fans want their clubs to buy better players, so they need more money to do that. So it's just a vicious circle where people complain, but then actually, what do we do here? How do we change this?
Why not enlarge the squads? So why not go from 25 or so? I think it's 25 in the Premier League you're allowed to register. Why and Europe as well? Why not go 35? Why not? And so you're going to have more players, more. You know, if you're going to continue to play more games, and that's the trend, right? Because everybody wants more games, more money. Clubs want more. National teams need more. World Cups, Euros, 32 teams in the Euros, going to, 48 teams at a World Cup. There are more games. So I think you have to enlarge the squads. I mean, World Cup, they went to 26. I still don't think it's enough. I think you can go more.
But then will the managers really rotate that much? They'll just try and play their best players all the time. I mean, if you could, I don't know. It makes sense in theory, but then in practice, how much of that squad would actually be used when big games are coming up and managers will say, I need this player, you need to play. And it's what you said as well. You know, players want to play. There was the example of Pedri a couple of years ago. He burst into the Barcelona youth team as this sensational teenager, basically played every game for Barcelona, played every game at the Euros for Spain, went to the Olympics and played every game. He ended up playing nearly 80 matches in a season, in his first proper season. And then he got injured and missed most of the rest of the season. So if it's down to the players to say, I can't do this, but then it's very difficult for players to say that. It's a difficult one and I don't have an answer. And we can make the squads bigger. Sure, that could help reduce some of the injuries coming, but it seems more intrinsic, this problem.
But you're right, like you're right in saying that they won't necessarily play it because they always want to play their best team, right? The theory is you have obviously more players, but you have better players that enables you to go, right, if I change one or the other, it doesn't really matter as much. But I know what you're saying, managers will have preferences and will stick with them. And we see it now with five substitutions.
But there's also the financial issue.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Barcelona can afford 35 players in their squad. You know, I think they've got enough issues as it is.
Well, currently as it is that's not possible. Yeah. That's the problem. Yeah.
So I sadly think that it's just a little bit of a collateral damage of the way football is going. I don't think there's it's too big a juggernaut to stop it. Because people want to see the best players every week, and that's going to be the issue. You know, they don't want to. You know, the fans haven't signed up for lesser players, and that's the problem you have all the time. More games, yeah. And people want to see the best players.
Yeah, some way along the line they've got to. You're right. I mean, who knows? I mean, that was just something off the top of my head about extra players in the squad, and it is certainly even more difficult then to manage because it's difficult to manage with 25 players in a squad, let alone say you go 35 players. So it's going to be a challenge, obviously. That there's no quick, simple solution to all this.
But this is also a solution which, an issue which affects the biggest clubs, right? Because I can tell you that Sporting Gijón are not complaining about the international break because, you know, players, the biggest clubs have the most money, they buy the best players, and the best players go on international duty. So again, as Thomas said, it's kind of a collateral damage. It's kind of par for the course. You want the best players in the world, you pay big money for them, but those best players go and play for their international teams. And this could happen. You know, this is part of the risk you take. It's worth mentioning that Gavi, that injury, it's a knee injury. It was with a clash. It's not a muscular thing. It's not something that he's picked up for playing too much. Same with Camavinga, who got injured. He got injured in training because Ousmane Dembélé fell on him. These are things that can happen. You know, if you're training, if you're at home, you know, things can happen. You can get injured. But it is true that the more games you play, the more you are. The chances are higher of you getting injured. That is true. But it's not all down to muscle fatigue because of too many matches.
Another one just quickly is that talking about injuries and muscle injuries reminded me of Andre Onana. He's someone that apparently has picked up an injury during their recent win 3-0, I think it was, and for Cameroon, and he's on his way back to Manchester United. Thomas, is that a big loss?
You know, I think it is. You know, that's their future. You know, yes, we can discuss how great he's been. It's been very up and down, but
or not.
You know, if they want to build something and they've spent a lot of money, he has to play. And you know, if somebody else comes in and does reasonably well, then you know you end up with an Arsenal problem that hasn't been pretty. So we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what happens. But you know, I would like to see Onana. I think he's exciting. Not always clean, but you know, he certainly makes us. You know, there's certainly highlights.
I'm going to digress quickly because you just flashlight light bulb went in my head there. Talk about Arsenal, David Raya and Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale's dad getting involved. Has your dad ever got involved publicly?
But my dad? No. No, I would have told them to stay away. they're very conservative people, so I've been quite fortunate, but. It's never nice. You know, when you see wives getting, you know, and dads and family getting involved, it always ends ugly. You know, so it's, but I think Arteta, I think a lot of us foresaw it. And I think, you know, he should have been smarter from the start. I don't think he handled it well, the things he said. So I think he opened that can of worms and has to now deal with it.
Yeah, because we talked about it the other day on the podcast, and we were talking about, I said, I would hope that Arteta had said something to Aaron Ramsdale, but it doesn't look like he has. And obviously his father's come out and said he didn't know anything about it and he hasn't spoken to him about it. And that's really poor management. I'm actually surprised with Arteta because I would have thought that he would have pulled him aside. And they're the conversations as players you want to have with a manager. You want, as much as you don't like it, I would rather the manager be completely honest with me. Tell me for whatever reason, right, I've decided, for example, in this instance, David Raya is a better goalkeeper or is the goalkeeper I want as my number one. You don't even have to say he's a better goalkeeper. I want him as my number one because I think he's better with his feet. We can play out better. He suits my style more. So he's number one until such time as he doesn't perform or whatever. But he's going to get a guaranteed run of games. I'd rather that. I'd be annoyed. I'd be up. I'd be devastated. I'd be so pissed. However, as it goes on, at least I can say, well, that's his opinion, and at least he was up front with me. But he's not been up front right now, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think as players, that's all you want. You know, you want clear lines, and also it gives you a mission. Then, like, you've got things to work on. You know, you obviously want to compete on certain parameters that the manager thinks the other is better than you, and you know, so, yeah, not knowing, I think in all aspects of life, I think it's the worst situation you can be in.
David Raya, who played for Spain in this international break, and he started the game against Cyprus. He didn't have too much to do, but he did concede a goal to the mighty Costas Pileas, who scored with 15 minutes to go. Very well taken goal. David Raya probably couldn't have done too much about it. But yeah, he'll be annoyed because he should have had a clean sheet there against Cyprus. And as I mentioned earlier, the team kind of went to sleep in the second half and allowed Cyprus to score a rare goal against Spain.
So why did David Raya play ahead of Unai Simón? I mean, it's a big game, right?
Yeah, I think he felt that, you know, against Cyprus, with all due respect to my the land of my father, it is a very, 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 very modest team, and one which allows you to make some kind of changes. So David Raya came in. He rested Rodri. Martin Zubimendi started. Alex Grimaldo had a debut at a left back. It was a game that he'd obviously thought, right here, I'm going to experiment a little bit. Alvaro Morata didn't start and give some of the squad players a chance. And David Raya is number two at the moment in the pecking order in Spain. And that's why he started.
So you can understand why the fans are upset about Gavi playing, having made all those other changes, right? Which you kind of understand, right? But he's probably looking at the manager going, he's a young kid, he can handle it, he'll be fine.
Yeah, Gavi played 90 minutes and he played the whole game against Cyprus. So yeah, listen, I understand why in theory certain people might on the surface take it and say, you could have rested him. Sure, he could have rested him, but equally, you know, he's fully entitled to play him.
And most importantly, just to wrap this little bit up, all of that's been talked about. We talked about all these injuries to these players, Vinicius Jr. and Gavi for Barcelona and Vinicius obviously for Real Madrid. That opens a door for Girona. Surely it's Girona's title to win now, Phil. this is just literally, it's like the parting of the seas.
But listen, it's like what I said. So, you know, smaller, quote unquote, smaller teams like Girona, who do not have as many players going off on international breaks, they're not complaining too much about what they call in Spain the FIFA virus, when players get injured when they go away, because they don't have that many players going out. Like, I'll give you an example. Aleix Garcia got called up for Girona and he made his debut in that game against Cyprus. He's the first ever Girona player to get called up to the Spain national team. So he made history there. But Girona, you know, historically, are not a side that have had a lot of players going off on international duty. They're 2 points clear of Real Madrid at the top of the table. And everybody's been doing their homework now. Every regular listeners know, always watch Girona. They're playing Athletic Club at home next week. So make sure you tune in for that.
Well, let's move on to the WSL. The Women's Super League was in action again this weekend, so let's get all the latest from Narelle and Amy Chapman.
Thanks, Schwartzy. Yes, well, plenty of Aussies making a mark in the WSL. Chappie, Kyra Cooney-Cross stood out for Arsenal in just her second start and winning the Player of the Match award.
Yeah, a couple of big games, obviously, on the weekend, but some even bigger performances. And I think Kyra Cooney-Cross is the one we've got to talk about straight up. She got her second start, first Player of the Match performance, and she was everywhere. And to slot into a star-studded Arsenal team like that is quite phenomenal. I think there was a lot of question marks over, is this the right move for someone like Kyra Cooney-Cross? So much talent, but still so young. Will she get the minutes? Well, she's proving she can, she's capable, and in big games. It was a great performance for her.
Caitlin Ford keeping her spot in the team. She's got 2 goals in 2 games now. And if you haven't seen it, you should go and watch it, because it was another great finish.
She's oozing confidence, isn't she? A massive first touch and a wonderful finish from outside the box. Low and hard drive. She's such an essential part of that Arsenal attack. And another one to mention is Beth Mead. First time back starting after her ACL. So talk about talent and star-studded lineup. The fact that Kyra Cooney-Cross is slotting in and getting Player of the Match performances. And we see a bit of rotation, of course, with Steph Catley. She only got 25 minutes on the weekend. Katie McCabe, obviously, out there. And they've got a lot of games. So it is about that rotation. But it's also a really competitive squad.
It is. It was also an historic weekend, I guess, in the WSL, because it was the first ever women's Manchester derby to be played at Old Trafford. And Alana Kennedy won the Player of the Match award as City defeated them at home. I'll admit it, I really didn't think they could get the job done, just the way they've been going lately. But to see them bounce back in style, I think, is a turning point for them.
Yeah, they've been under a ton of pressure. We talk about talented depth squads. That's certainly one of them. Man City is oozing talent, but under quite a bit of pressure leading into such a big match. First big proper derby at Old Trafford, and Manchester is blue, and Alana Kennedy was the Player of the Match. She really coaches that back line as well. So a big statement from her. No Mary Fowler in that game, or I think she saw perhaps 1 minute. A big statement from her. But how hilarious was the post-match interview with Alana Kennedy? We saw she was so nonchalant about heading down the road to Old Trafford. It was quite comical to listen to.
But I suppose that's a good way to look at it, right? Like, you don't want to psych yourself out for a big match like that.
No, and I think that's a bit of an Aussie way, isn't it? It's an Aussie way of approaching these games. It's just another game. It's just another 3 points up for grabs. And she played like that. She's certainly finding some form.
For Manchester City now, their manager Gareth Taylor said before that match that they had to remain unbeaten for the rest of the season to stand a chance at taking out the title. Can you see them remaining unbeaten from this point onwards?
Well, I think that's a huge task, especially when they're trying to manage the amount of load that they've got in these players as well. But I think that's a massive task, but it's worked. It's one game at a time, and that certainly was a big one, and they got all 3 points.
Yeah, well, there were 43,500 fans at Old Trafford, and Schwartzy, we heard you were one of them. The atmosphere must have been incredible.
Yes, I was one of those people in the stadium, but unfortunately, I don't think I actually counted to that total. So there should have been 43,500 and whatever extra one, because I was obviously working there. So I don't think I count because I don't pay for a ticket. I don't even remember the last time I paid for a ticket for myself. That is, I don't want to brag.
Shock.
And you shock. Normally I go to those games, don't I? I mean, I'm not mentioning any names of people who have tickets to big, big games and for whatever reason, a bit cold, a bit under the weather, don't want to go. I'm just saying,
right,
it was a great atmosphere. Right. It was really good. It was fantastic to see. And there's something about Old Trafford when in like late afternoon, when the rain's coming down, the pitch is so zippy and you're there and you're playing a big, big game with a lot of fans in it. There's something special about Old Trafford. It really is. And the name, at the time when I was playing, I don't know about you, Thomas, the Theatre of Dreams, I was like, nah, it's a bit corny. I don't really like, you know, what is that, you know? But the more I've played there and the longer it's gone on and the more I've gone to watch games, I really get it now. I don't know, call me stupid, but I didn't really get it before. Whereas now, the more I've thought about it, I actually get it. The Theatre of Dreams is a truly magical place to play football. That's my experience. What about yours?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, in our early days, you know, it was also the great Manchester United side, you know, with obviously Beckham and Scholes and Giggs and also, and then on to Ronaldo, who came a bit later. And I think you sensed that when you got there, Alex Ferguson. There was this aura. You know, I think we got done a couple of times in Fergie time where, you know, you just knew it was right to the death. You know, you were fighting and you thought you had hope. But, you know, I don't think I've had many great results at Old Trafford. It was always a tough place to go. But I think I sensed that history, though. I think you could sort of, there was something about it that you didn't get at other grounds, at some other grounds.
You know what it did for me? When you're at Old Trafford, you know, you walk in from the corner and you kind of go down into that little gully bit on the edge of the pitch, and then you walk up onto the pitch, and that's your theatre, right? And that's what it is.
Yeah.
Kind of like you, as you walk on that pitch and you walk across, and obviously you're walking across from the corner, that's the thing that makes it spend. The crowd's insane. And then the other bit is when you're in the game and say you've had a cut period of time of dominance, didn't happen very often, but you'd have a bit of time of possession and maybe you took the lead, because that happened with us with Middlesbrough quite a few times. We actually had a pretty decent result scores at Old Trafford. Then all of a sudden United, the crowd that obviously went quiet when you scored, but the minute you kind of was kicking off again, or they were kicking off, it roared into action. And it's something different, and very few grounds I'd ever experienced that. And then once they started to attack, that roar got louder, if it's even possible.
It sounds like what you're describing when you're walking up onto the pitch is that you're walking up onto a stage. To continue the theater metaphor. So you're walking up there like, now I'm here. This is the stage. I have to perform. Sounds pretty special.
It's funny because Optus Sports spoke to Alana Kennedy after the game about playing at Old Trafford, which I don't think she's ever played there before in such a big game like that with so many people. And her response was, it's just a stadium down the road. Obviously she's playing for the rivals, the blue side. And
that's the correct
else.
Answer.
And
so that's she's correct
played,
answer.
She's played up to it. Yes. Yes.
And she smashed it, man. Like, she was player of the match. So absolutely.
Yeah. She was very good. Yeah. She did very well. I mean, she was, to be fair, I mean, she played like she had a cigar in her mouth. That's how cool and calm she was at the back there. Her and Alex Greenwood, they controlled the game. Man United were way off it in that regard. Other than the first 25 minutes when United were pretty decent. Wasn't great. Premier League, let's talk about Premier League. Everton, points deduction. Did anyone see that one coming? Like, we knew that they were in trouble, but Phil, did you see a points deduction of that severe nature happening?
Oh, that magnitude, no, because it's the most severe points deduction ever in Premier League history. So I don't think anyone expected it to be 10 points. But I think the general feeling was that they're gonna be in trouble because they've broken the rules, and they've broken the rules by quite a big margin. Now, whether other people have broken the rules and they haven't faced any justice yet at the moment because of legal wranglings by very, very expensive lawyers, that is what is making people, I think, raise quite a lot of eyebrows at this. The fact that Manchester City and Chelsea have also got similar problems but haven't had anything charged against them yet in terms of a points deduction. But like I said, they've broken the rules. There had to be some kind of punishment. I'm not sure people thought 10 points was going to happen, but it has happened. And we'll get onto this in just a second, but I'm just throwing it out there. Even with that 10-point deduction, I think they're going to stay up.
Thomas?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're going to stay up. But like, when you look at the teams around Sheffield United, Luton, you know, Burnley, you know, I don't think, you know, it's a year where they're not good enough. And I think what we've seen of Everton of late, you know, I think over the last, you know, couple of months, they've been one of the better teams in the league, you know, at least points-wise. And, you know, Sean Dyche has got them playing in a certain way. And I think this is going to galvanize them even more. I think, you know, I was at a time when I was at Stoke and everyone was against us and it galvanized us. And they'll feel the same. You know, the fans will be up for it. They've got Man United.
What do you mean a time at Stoke? No, what do you mean a time at Stoke? Everybody hated Stoke all the time.
Okay. All right. But we felt it. And it galvanized us, Swartzy. So, we did pretty well. So, you know, I'm sure it's going to happen at Everton as well. And I don't fear for them in that respect. You know, I think it's just on a broader scale. Yeah, it just opens a can of worms because it's a broad, like two-sided sword. You know, you obviously want these owners with a lot of money involved, and that's what the Premier League have thrived on. You know, it's been the Wild West to some extent. You know, people have come from all over the world to get a piece of the pie, and you know, you sort of sense, and you know, the law enforcement has been blinded a little bit because people have been making money and you know, the Premier League has grown. You know, what's the ins and outs? So we'll see what obviously happens. But it'll be interesting because the Premier League have now set a precedent now on what will happen to clubs that don't abide by the rules.
Yeah, and it will be interesting moving forward. I mean, I agree. I think Everton will survive. I think it's between Bournemouth, Luton, Sheffield United and Burnley. Out of those teams, I wouldn't have said this at the start of the season, but having watched Luton play at home to Liverpool and knowing how difficult it was to play in a tiny, tiny ground like theirs, I would say that they've possibly got the best chance out of those teams to get out of it. And I think Everton will be fine. Interestingly, Everton will have obviously put in an appeal, so we'll see whether those 10 points stay at 10 points or whether it does get reduced. More often than not, it does get reduced by something, by how much, we'll see. And then that's it, right? It'll be... I think the question mark is that the accusations against City have come out ages ago, and that's still ongoing. Maybe it's a lot more complicated because of UEFA and all that sort of stuff, but the Premier League, obviously, and there's so many charges potentially against them, that's going to be, and I think that's where the spotlight is on them even more, and obviously what Chelsea have done.
There is also another aspect to this story which could get really, really messy / intriguing from afar, and it's that teams could sue Everton after this points deduction. Suggestions that Leeds, Leicester and Burnley could sue them for up to £300 million because they broke the rules and they obviously went down and suffered because they were breaking the rules. That could make things really, really, really messy as well when other teams come in and start saying, you broke the rules, I was directly affected, I want compensation. That's another aspect to all this.
And the other knock-on from that is, if those teams were to be successful, that would possibly most likely send Everton into administration and therefore they would actually lose more points. So it's like, yeah, it is completely a snowball effect. And yeah, gosh, I don't even know where you start with that one. I actually had it once in my career. When I first signed for Middlesbrough, they actually already had their 3 points deducted. So back in 96, 97 season. And the reason being, they got points deducted, 3 points, because they didn't turn up to a game. They said that there was a virus going through the club and therefore weren't able to play the game, fulfill that fixture. So the league were very harsh, because what the league did was they took 3 points off Middlesbrough, and they also gave Blackburn at the time 3 points plus three goals. So it was a 6 point swing for Middlesbrough. So had Middlesbrough gone and played the game and played with, what, nine players, for example, and lost the game 25-0, they still would have been in a better position. Actually, come the end of the season, we would have stayed up because we went down on 1 point. So it was crazy. It was a catastrophe at the time. And I think Middlesbrough felt that they would be given kind of special dispensation for the illness that went through the club. And it backfired massively. Thomas, have you ever had it at a club where you've had points deducted for any reason?
No, I've only tried it once with a national
to have points
team.
Deducted? Where... You've only tried once to have points deducted? Is that what it is?
Yeah, no, when we played Sweden and a guy ran on and we ended up losing the game despite drawing. So, but not at a club level. You know, there's been financial trouble. When I was at Sunderland, the club was already going down the drain and a lot of players left and you knew it wasn't going to be pretty from there, but it obviously never went to administration and points deduction, but, you know, it's never great to be in a situation like that. I'm sure the players will be affected at Everton as well. You know, it's always, you know, bad when things are that, like that nature is lingering, because, you know, ultimately if it affects your livelihood as well, you know, with what happens with a club.
How are you guys when you lost points or end up losing the game with that national team game because the fan run on? What's your feeling about it? What's the initial reaction as players?
You know, you obviously, you first of all, you got it for the actual game. But then there's also the bigger picture, you know, that sort of then falls on you. You know, the reputation and these are the same things that Everton has to deal with as well. You know, Mushiri, it looks like he's obviously going to try to like sell the club. You know, it'll be great to get him out and start fresh. I think that's what Everton needs with the new stadium as well. You know, so there's positive things around the corner if they can get things right. And also with Denmark, we found a way forward. We didn't qualify, but I think there was some healing that went on and a lot of things that changed after that game that made it more safe around national team games.
Yeah, I remember at Middlesbrough, a lot of players were actually frustrated. Because I remember the feeling, distinct feeling when I turned up, because I obviously was asking questions. I wasn't there at the time. And I said, well, explain to me what happened. And a lot of the players told me they were as surprised as everyone else that the game was called off. That they didn't believe that it was as bad or didn't feel it was as bad. So that's a problem then.
Thomas, talking about positive things coming from these things. And I just want to just highlight, it's not my job to constantly big up La Liga, but in La Liga, there are very stringent financial fair play rules to the detriment of certain La Liga clubs, in theory, because fans are saying, why are they, we don't have enough money, we've got to sell players, there's this player exodus to the Premier League. But La Liga is making sure that clubs are spending within their limits. They're setting limits and you are not allowed to go over those limits. So I don't know if something similar like that in the Premier League is the way forward. But here in Spain, it's certainly helped clubs spend within their limits and not have financial problems, which was very, very common here a few years ago.
Yeah, was that also... I think that's a knock-on effect. My understanding with Spain, and certainly the reputation from the outside, was that outside the top three or four clubs... the vast majority of the other clubs weren't clubs that paid their players regularly because of that financial dealings. They didn't really manage their funds well enough. So that was more necessity from the league, right? To make sure that they better reputation cleaned up the league.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the vast majority of teams didn't pay their players, but it was something that, you know, regularly could happen in Spain. You know, we're talking about maybe a decade ago, maybe 10, 15 years ago. It was something that could regularly happen here. And now it doesn't. We've seen massive clubs in Spain be so badly financial mismanaged that they've dropped down the leagues. I'm talking like Deportivo La Coruña. You will have heard of them, obviously. They're now playing in the third division. Malaga, the same, now playing in the third division. There has been a financial mismanagement there. But in terms of the league making sure that clubs can't be not paying their players, for example, the league's been very, very clear about that. So if clubs do go down like that, it's not the league's fault. It's because they've been managed so badly. So yeah, I don't know if we're going to see something like that in the Premier League. My instinct says no, but it's not such a bad idea. Even though on paper fans might whinge because it restricts their club's ability to buy players, which is basically what every fan wants, is the shiny new signings.
Well, we're not at the halfway mark yet. I mean, we're just over a quarter of the way through. So let's talk about a team of the season so far. And this is going to be interesting. I've been told we have to do it as a 4-3-3, which kind of limited me a little bit because I was going to put an extra player in midfield and have only three defenders in my team. But anyway, let's start. Phil, I got a feeling I know who you're going to put in goal. You start, Phil.
No, I didn't want to be too obvious. Basically, I was going to put half of my team was going to be Spurs, maybe more, but I don't want to be too obvious. Listen, I'm here. It feels that I feel a bit awkward talking about football with two ex-pros, and certainly talking about goalkeeping with two legendary ex-goalkeepers. I feel I'm a bit out of my depth, so I'm just going to very quietly say Alisson Becker is my goalkeeper at the moment, and you can tell me why I'm right or wrong.
Oh, Thomas, what do you reckon?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're far off. I think for me it was between Becker and Vicario. I think you look at the stats as well. You know, first you look at like the eye test, and I think they both passed it. And then the stats back it up as well. So you can pick either. I think they both deserve to be in there. You know, I picked Vicario because, you know, it's always difficult to come into a new league. We've seen how, you know, other goalkeepers have struggled. Alisson Becker is just consistent. So, you know, just for a little bit of new spice, I've picked Vicario.
You know what? I mean, I've eaten my words already and I'm going to eat them again. Wasn't sure about Vicario, but I put him in my team so far as well. So, Phil, we're going to go with Vicario. And I know you'll be delighted.
Delighted. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm very happy to be honest. I had so many Spurs players in my team that I had to take some out. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, we're sure we're going to go with Vicario. Let's start off with our back line. Thomas, you start. Whoever you want to start with.
I'll take my right back, Trippier. I think again this year he started off with 6 assists. I think he's a leader in that team as well, consistent every week in and week out. It could be Trent Alexander-Arnold, it could be others, but no, for me he's my right back.
Phil, you agree?
Agree. Yeah, I've got him as well. You know, could have put Pedro Porro there, but no, we'll go Kieran Trippier.
Yeah, see, on my list, I've only got three defenders, so I didn't have Trippier on it. So for the fourth one, yeah, I'm going with Trippier as well because, yeah, okay. He's been brilliant. He's a top-class player, so I'm more than happy to go with that. I'm gonna pick my one now for another defender. I'm going to say, and Phil, you'd be probably happy to hear again, another Spurs player, Mickey van der Ven.
He's in mine.
He's in mine. Okay, so, we're unanimous. Yeah. There you go. That's absolutely brilliant because I think he's been absolutely brilliant. And a big, big loss for Spurs. And by the sounds of things, he's out for a considerable time, which is a real, real shame because he's just been absolutely awesome so far. Easy done, that one. That was pretty easy. Phil, you go on the next one now.
There's an Argentine lad who I could have put there alongside Mickey van der Ven for Spurs, but yeah. No, I'm not going to make this all Spurs. I put Virgil van Dijk. I think he's started in commanding fashion. Liverpool have got a really good defensive record. I think he's a big part of that. So I think if you look at it as a pairing, van Dijk and van der Ven, I like the sounds of that.
Thomas, what have you gone with? Because, I mean, I haven't got Virgil in my team, but what do you reckon?
No, I haven't as well. I've got Ruben Dias.
Have you?
You know, it's... Yeah, I have. Yeah. big fan of his. I've got actually two Man City players.
So who's your other one?
Guardiol. just because I'm a fan.
Have you got Guardiola?
Yeah. So but again, if Odogi, I think has done great. Like, we couldn't put another Tottenham player in there. And I even think Anthony Robinson from Fulham, I think he's been great as well. A little bit under the radar, but he could get in there. But yeah, Diaz and Guardiola.
Okay, because I've got Akanji from City, because I rate Akanji. He's been absolutely brilliant for City. And since he's actually arrived at City, I think he's been absolutely brilliant. So we're really split here, aren't we? So, Phil, who did you say again?
I had Virgil van Dijk. I'm happy to go with Akanji. I like that suggestion. I also had Destiny Adoji at left back. So I don't know if we can maybe do a deal. Maybe Adoji goes in because Thomas mentioned him. I don't know who you had at left back, but
yeah, I haven't got anyone there. So I mean I've got William Saliba in my side as a back. I had the back three.
Yeah.
I think he's been really good as well. So we're talking Guardiola, Saliba or Ruben Diaz.
Boy, it's not a bad. Is it nice? Good a headache to have.
The sub bench is looking all right anyway. For whoever those are ending up on the sub, two of those on the bench is going to be all right, isn't it?
Much as it pains me, Saliba's actually a really good shout, isn't it? I could get behind Saliba as well. Yeah.
Are you happy with that, Thomas?
All right. Yeah, let's go. He's doing well.
Let's move into midfield.
Who's left back? Who's left back? We need four, right? Four.
1, 2, 3, 4. Trippier, Mickey van der Ven, Akanji and Saliba.
Okay, cool.
So, gotcha. I mean, you know, they can sort each other out. I mean, they're all like, you know, they'll be fine.
All right, yeah. Not
we've got four. We didn't have to necessarily go left back per se. We've got four defenders. That's all we need. 4-3-3. So we need three midfielders. I'm going to say it straight away. Dominic Szoboszlai from Liverpool.
I knew you were going to say that. You picked him preseason. Okay. You were exciting to see him preseason, and obviously he's been great. So he's not in my three, but he was sort of just below the level.
What?
I was between. What? I was between.
You haven't got him in your team.
No. Because I kind of knew that you would, so I decided to go for someone else as well. But
I've also got him on the bench. So
yeah, you got him on the bench. Okay, who have you got, Phil?
Yeah, I'll just tell you my three. I've got Rodri. Ward-Prowse and Madison.
Okay. And Thomas?
Yeah, I got Rodri, Madison and Declan Rice.
Whoa, so we're all agreeing that Rodri's in our midfield. No doubt about that whatsoever. I've got Douglas Luiz from Villa. 5 goals in 12 games. And obviously Szoboszlai. And so, I mean, it's an interesting combo, and you could pick any number of players.
I think Szoboszlai goes in because you've got him, and he's both on our sort of reserve list. So I think we should stick him in terms of sort of democracy. If you've got him 100% and he's sort of 50-50 for both me and Thomas, that should probably.
Oh, so we get Madison, and
correct.
Then he gets
because you got Madison in there. Yeah, no problems. Madison's play what? Has he played? Yeah, I mean his stats are not necessarily.
He's got three goals and five assists.
Come on.
Yeah, okay.
Come on.
He's got three goals and five assists.
Really? All right. You're right.
terrible anti-Spurs bias here.
No, well, it can't be. Vicario, Mickey van der Ven, Trippier, ex-Spurs player. Is there any more ex-players in there?
There's a very pro-Spurs team. Yeah.
Exactly.
Could be one in the front line as well. Who knows?
Well, front three? What have you gone for, Thomas? I mean, you said there could be one in the front three.
Salah, Haaland, and Son.
Okay.
With a mention of Ollie Watkins, Doku, Bowen. Good.
See, I've got two out of those three. I've got Salah and Son up front as well. What have you got, Phil?
Salah.
You haven't got Haaland?
No.
Okay. Whoa. Well, that's weird, but yeah. Yeah. Salah, Haaland, and then I was between Jared Bowen and Mbamo.
I haven't got Salah. For some reason, I think Salah's had Haaland hasn't been great, but he has. Hasn't
13
he?
Goals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
why didn't I do that? Oh, that's easy then, isn't it?
I think Haaland was in there, mate. I think there's a bit of an
oversight. I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, you just forgot about him. He's easy to forget about, you know.
Look, I had a late night last night. Rushed this morning. You know, I'm gonna make all the excuses in the world for that one. Salah was always in my team. He's in my fantasy football team. Why wouldn't I have him in my team of the season so far?
So we've got Salah and Haaland, and who's the third spot then? Because I've said Jared Bowen, you've said Son, and who?
We both said Son, didn't we?
We both said Son. All right, so Son. Oh no, another Spurs player in. Oh.
Yeah. I knew you wouldn't be happy, Phil. So that's pretty decent. One thing we probably haven't, I don't know if you guys have, I certainly haven't got him down or anything, but manager so far.
Right. Who's been manager of the season for the three months? I think it's Angelos.
Big Ange on there. Get him.
Big Ange is on there. Of course he is. Yeah. And that really fits into what I'm going to say next. Tomorrow, I'm actually at Tottenham's training ground. I'm interviewing Big Ange. First time since he's been at Spurs. I get a chance to sit down with him. And of course, Mile Jednak afterwards as well. So that's going to be really, really cool. Phil, you're the big diehard fan. I've heard you've never interviewed Ange before. What would you want to ask him?
I just want you to tell him that I love him. If you could just make that abundantly clear. Can you just tell him that?
That's going to be a bit awkward, I think.
Yes.
What's awkward? I know this guy. He's Greek. He's from North London. He loves you. I do a podcast with him.
Well, let me just write that down. Phil Kitromilidis. I mean, just to let you know, Ange, his dad's from Cyprus. I mean, that might cause some issues. He said to say he loves you.
My mum's from Greece, so it's fine. I've got the Greek passport.
So he's confused because his mum's from from Greece and his dad's from Cyprus.
What would we ask Ange? It's a good question because there's so many things that we'd like him to ask. Just how is he finding the Premier League? Like, how is it different to anywhere else he's coached? Because he is so experienced and he's been all around the world and he's had so many different experiences in different leagues. The Premier League is sold as this elite level of coaching. So how is the experience of finally being in the Premier League been for these first 3 months? Obviously, in terms of results, it's gone well, but on like in a sort of an emotional, personal level, have there been anything that surprised him, anything that's sort of different to what he imagined, something like that?
And Thomas, have you got anything you would like to know from Ange?
What's the Greek food scene in London? You know, is the souvlaki, is it any good? Or
it's pretty good, mate. Pretty good. He's in the right spot. North London is the right spot for Greek food.
I don't know if I've only got 10 minutes with him, but I don't know if I'd ask him that question about the Greek food. Maybe after off camera and I'll ask him. But Well, we'll leave it at that. But I'm looking forward to it. Should be really good. Ange is always great value to talk to. And obviously, they've been flying and he's been doing a fantastic job, even though the last two results haven't been the best. But look, that's how it is. We knew there were going to be some hiccups along the way. That's all we got time for. Thanks, Phil and Thomas. You'll be able to listen to that Ange and Mile interview on the Optus Sport football podcast feed later this week. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.